welcome to Aspire. I'm your host, Gregory Pan. How deeply grateful I am you are with me on this 23rd day of December, 2018. Very close to Christmas. I hope you're all ready and snuggled in with your families and doing whatever you like to do at this time of year. We're going to be looking at why we think, and I thought it would be appropriate today because everybody's thinking only basically about one thing, and that is the preparations probably for their Christmas experience and what kind of preparations they're making and how important it generally is to people. We're going to be looking at our thoughts today, and I hope this is very helpful. We're in our fundraising drive till the end of this year, actually to the beginning of next year, just the first few days. And our mystery donor is doubling this week, your donation. So if you make a donation, let's say of $25, he will double that. He'll make it $50. Not just 25 and match it, he will double it. So this is a really important time of year for us. I hope that you will become a sponsor. He will double that as well. And if you do, your gift, tax deductible, of course, each and every month or quarterly, however you want to do it, will be doubled. He's a trying to help us out here to sustain our radio program, our TV efforts, and everything that I do, my hospice work, everything that sustains, well, really, Aspire. It is more than just philosophy and certainly not religion. It is something far more than that, and I'm hoping that some of you who recognize all this and can see the value of it in your life or in the lives of others will make a contribution to help us, not only sustain, but to serve people. I am the kind of person who is a nitty-gritty guy. I like to get down in the trenches and be with people, not on the podium, not on the stage, but really down with them to talk with them, to get to understand the nature of what's going on in humankind. And I do a lot of this through my hospice work and a lot of it, of course, through counseling and my retreats and workshops. So anyway, I hope you will help sustain this work that serves those who really are forgotten. People in hospice are definitely forgotten. Believe me, they are. And their families are, well, not very supportive for the most part. And I do everything I can to help them cross over. It's a very beautiful thing, actually. Go to the website at aspire.org. On the splash page, you will see the year-end thing, that thing, and you can click on it and make your donation, and I hope you will today. It's very important. This offer that the mystery donor is giving us is only good I think he said next week, so don't hesitate, okay? Let's talk about our thinking. What are our thoughts? What thoughts do you have? Do you have thoughts? When do they come? How often do you have thoughts? How often? Probably every second of the day. It is if you look at the word thought or think, it is usually about a process in the brain of how we process through our brains anything and everything that comes across our radar. My thoughts are genetic. My thoughts come from my genetic nature, all the ancestors I've had all throughout my lifetime. Every one of those little boogers have created in me a place of thought, a place where I can live in thought or have thoughts. The thoughts I might have might not be the same thoughts that you have because of genetic nature. And yet we would find often commonality. Our thoughts define our DNA, how I live with the survival mechanism. That is the whole thing. My survival mechanism is my DNA. It tells me what to be afraid of, what I should be concerned about. Then my brain interprets that and thinks of cunning ways to survive. When my ancestors lived, you know, many thousands of years ago, like yours, they figured out how to build traps and kill animals and eat them. And I don't know where that came from. I really don't. They probably watched other animals killing each other. And then we, being what we are in our DNA, we are animals. Just followed the lineage all the way through. Here we are with our thoughts. And to think is to have an opinion, a belief, an idea of something. It can be all sorts of different modalities. You can think usually inside the box, and that's what most people do, the pedestrian mentality, or you can think outside it. So here's the first question from John. He does not tell me where he lives. I listen to you on the internet, and I enjoy your programs. How can I be aware of my thoughts? I know this is an important part of meditation, but I'm never aware of them no matter how I try. John. Well, yes, you are, John. You're aware of your thoughts. You're aware they exist. I don't know if we always can understand or comprehend the quality of them. I think the quality of our thoughts is an enigma to a lot of us. We just spiel out thoughts about any given thing that's going on around us or any given thing in our brain. We just spiel it out and we just think about it over and over and over again, and it becomes a problem for us. It really does. Because we don't know where these thoughts come from. Sometimes we have thoughts that help us with our work, with the creativity of us, but creative thoughts are very different from, let's say, my normal Greg Penn pedestrian mentality thoughts that I have. Creative thoughts come from another place, a place where emotion and passion are kind of, what shall we say, downgraded a little bit, and inspiration comes through. Something of a other shore mentality starts to arise. So there you are with that one. But our thoughts, how can you be aware of them? You must slow down. You must practice meditation. And it is very simple, giving yourself space from one thought to another. And the way you do that in meditation is to no longer assign a value to thoughts themselves as you go through your day. Meditation is not just sitting formally. It's a lifestyle. It's the way you live. And when I assign an emotional value, and a value of emotion is assigned to a thought, either way, you can go right or left. That is when a thought is created. That is when a thought becomes obsessive. And you have to begin to understand the difference between an obsessive thought, a thought born out of fear, a thought born out of hate, a thought born out of DNA and genetics picking it up and starting to cultivate some kind of reaction to it. The difference between that and what we call no mind. In Zen, no mind. A mind no longer seeking to consider what is right and wrong, what is good and bad. A mind that is not in judgment of anything. Just an observing mind. Watching. Just watching. Now, a watching mind is very, very, very different than a reactive mind. In a reactive mind, you just think and react to whatever it is you do think. So that goes around and around and around and around. A lot of our thoughts, dear John, are coming out of this whole idea of what my forefathers could think. In other words, my father, Ed Penn, let's just take it from my point of view. Ed had a certain array of thoughts that he could entertain. And he would entertain those thoughts based on his emotional nature. Now, his emotions came from his body. Mine come from my body. I inherited his body. I inherited some of his traits. And I inherited some of my mother's traits. And all of a sudden, I come up with this thing called a Gregory. And the Gregory can think only inside the box that his genetic nature will approve of. And Gregory will not try to go outside that box too much because his emotions won't let him. His emotions tell him there's danger there. Or his emotions will say that out there is hate and fear and he could get hurt. All sorts of superstitions. And they are superstitions, believe me, they are. They're not reality. So I have all of these things going on, and I will tell you, John, the main culprit of the quality of our thoughts is in the state of our emotionality and how we have used our emotionality or how we have cultivated emotionality. And typically, emotionality is cultivated out of body memory. The moment you're born, your body starts becoming a recorder. And it records everything in the womb. It records everything outside the womb. It feels pain and sorrow and joy and what it thinks of as happiness. It's gratification through and through. And the more gratification it feels, the more pain it feels, the more pleasure it feels, the more it articulates a certain kind of emotion that is, in my case, a Gregory emotion or a Pan emotion. And then my thoughts gather around and think, oh, these are bad emotions. These are bad things that can happen. And a lot of our thoughts are based in assumptions. Or these are good thoughts and these are good things that can happen. And we just stay in that little box. We never explore the gap and the pause between our thoughts. It is in that gap. It is in that pause between my thoughts that the reality of life exists, the true reality of it all. But we can't appreciate that because the only thoughts that, let's say, a Gregory can appreciate or a John can appreciate is the ones that come from their genetic nature. We are biased in our thoughts. We are prejudicial in our thinking. And I'm not talking about race. I'm just talking about thoughts themselves. There are certain thoughts that some people really like a great deal and some thoughts that they don't like a great deal. So that's a bias. And we live in these biases in order to sustain persona, personality, and the state of our egos. And we all have them. Everybody has. I have it. Everybody does. Everybody has some state of ego. Object of the effort, the spiritual effort, is not to act from that. And if you do that, if you can no longer act from that, then something of the other shore can reach you. Meditation is to vibrate to a tone inside of you that resonates to higher states of consciousness, which is why I do my Tummo Tibetan pulsing meditations where they are just filled with tone, doing breath work, watching the gap, and then allowing the tones to fill you with immense energy, replacing thought itself. Tone can replace thought, and when it does, insight begins, creativity abounds, and love pours out of you, just pours out. That's it, John. Sorry, I went on too long. Please forgive me. I hope it helped. Namaste. The next question. This comes from Jack, and he does not tell me where he lives. I've never heard from him before. What are thoughts themselves? I don't understand. Thoughts themselves are merely the entity. We, because we have no soul, because we have not developed the soul, because we have not moved into the soul, because we are not aware of the soul, we are merely an entity. An entity is a biological thing that runs around the planet, raping, killing, and pillaging everything it can to get what it wants. It lives for society. It does not live for the heart. It lives socially, but it does not live in the heart. It has no soul. It is looking for someone or people themselves to bring meaning to their life. For most of us, Jack, we live with the idea that other people and their opinions of us define who we are and what we are. And we live by those opinions and those beliefs. And that's where everything begins, moves, and ends, right there. And most people in their pedestrian mentality don't go any further with it. My thoughts are about all of that. My thoughts are about being whatever it is I can think and not considering the consequences of those thoughts upon my life. Now, that is the major thing. I do not want to recognize in my pedestrian mentality my thoughts and the consequences of them in the form of my lifetime. Now, when I understand that, when I can watch that without any bias whatsoever of right or wrong, good and bad, when I can observe this with all of my heart, my soul, my strength, then something springs up inside. Something happens within. My heart opens up. And in the heart, Jack, there is no need for thought itself. You will know if you are in the heart of your life because you will not need thought to convey the feel of it or to continue the feel of it. My thoughts define the entity of me, not the heart of me. And we have a great deal of difficulty because we think the entity that has a human heart that can be ruthless and unkind at a drop of the hat due to the fact of its need for survival is the only heart we have. And that is not true. There is so much more to us than the human heart. It has to be transcended, the human heart. You have to begin to move beyond that. If you do, and you move into this place where no thought exists, you start to awaken to factors that live within us all. And you can see it in everybody once you've achieved it. And you realize how beautiful everyone and everything is. You will no longer look at people as this or that with the bias of genetic thinking and the emotionality of our DNA. You will start to see people in the light of their heart. And once you see that, this great compassion rolls out. And this compassion fills your life and fills them. And you're able to sit with them or be with them in an entirely different way than you have ever been before. When I go to hospice, I feel nothing but this overwhelming, gigantic energy called love. And I surround my patient with it. I surround the atmosphere with it. I surround my students with it. When we're doing workshop or we're doing a retreat at Mount Madonna, I just surround them with this. Some of them can actually feel it, others of them can't, and others actually repel it because it is so foreign to their genetic dispositions. But nonetheless, it is there. And the same thing is happening to all of us. We are being flooded with love from within ourselves, from within this authentic heart. The things that are most important, Jack, are the things I can't think. And if you are willing to let go of those elements of thought that keep you bound to your entity, your human heart is the key here, then you will understand what thoughts are. They merely are the flavor of the day, of the moment, from my genetic nature, and that's all they are. They're fleeting, they don't matter, and they're difficult. And they make my life difficult. They make your life difficult. And when we are no longer interested in thinking them, in participating with them, then something changes dramatically. Hope that helps you, Jack. Please forgive me. Namaste. The last question from Bob in Northern California, he says. And Bob, I want to thank you for your kind words about the radio program and the TV. He asks one simple question. Why do I allow thought? Because it's susceptible to emotion, and you have become susceptible with emotion by identifying with your emotions. Emotions can be overwhelming, and typically they are. And when they become overwhelming, they become difficult, and when they become difficult, they become impossible to manage. So we use our thoughts to try to manage our emotions. And it is not a simple thing to do. It is a very complicated affair in most people's lives. They don't typically get it, but there you are. And we keep this going and going and going without hesitation. We think in terms of our emotions as being our feelings, and we feel absolutely obsessed by them. We think it's devotion, but actually it's obsession. And we miss everything that could be beautiful in our life because our emotions take precedent over everything. It doesn't matter if the facts are given to people. I've watched them. I've watched people being given absolute facts about any given situation, but they won't accept those facts without emotion. Somebody says to them, the fact of the matter is, and if they can identify a fear or a bias of hate or right or wrong, good or bad, bingo, the thought is there, they accept it, and they go with that. But there is none of that in the authentic heart. In the authentic heart, which is unappealing to the ego, there's no bias, there's no prejudice, there is just the feel of the heart, the authentic heart. It is a vibration. It is not like the entity and what it can perceive or conceive of. It is totally different. And once this is understood within you, that this bias, this emotional bias is there, and that it doesn't need to be participated in, then you will understand how you allow thoughts to happen, how some thoughts are allowed, other thoughts aren't, and you'll be frustrated. And if you're wise on the inside, you'll learn how to live without a thought. You will live not in impulse, but in the impression of your heart, bringing you to love itself. Impression, you feel and sense the vibration of an impression that is deeply significant to your life, deeply significant to your well-being. And you will participate in that over the emotions. But believe me, for a long time, it's going to be a struggle because our bodies love emotion. They live in emotion and passion, and that's what they think they require in order to survive. Really, that's all it's about. It's that simple. Bob, thank you for your beautiful question. I deeply appreciate it, and I hope it served you well, my answer. Well, there you are, another week. I hope you have a beautiful Christmas. I do. And I hope it's a one filled with sanctity and compassion. And may it serve you well to go into your new year with great love. I'll be back on the air next week. Please forgive me, won't you? Namaste.